a shipwreck destroyed everything Zeno owned. Stranded in Athens around 300 BC, he stumbled into a bookshop and discovered philosophy. That accident birthed Stoicism, a practical system for living well that would eventually guide Roman emperors, survive slavery, and offer solace in exile. Today, tech leaders credit it with maintaining sanity amid billion-dollar decisions, and ordinary people use it to navigate divorce, job loss, and daily frustrations. What makes this 2,300-year-old philosophy so enduringly relevant? It addresses a question most of us avoid until crisis forces our hand. What do you actually want from life? Consider how you spend your days. You want a better job, a loving partner, financial security, but these are things you want in life, not from life itself. What's your overarching purpose? Without answering this fundamental question, you risk what the Stoics called misliving, waking up at 70, realizing you've pursued goals that never truly mattered. The Stoics weren't the emotionless robots we imagine. They sought to eliminate negative emotions while cultivating joy and positive engagement. Cato the Younger fought corruption in Roman politics. Seneca advised emperors while writing influential philosophy. Marcus Aurelius ruled an empire during plague and war. These weren't passive observers, but deeply engaged individuals who made Stoicism work in demanding, real-world situations. Their central insight? We're fundamentally insatiable creatures. Get the promotion you craved, and within weeks, you're eyeing the next rung. Buy your dream house, and soon you're browsing bigger ones. This hedonic treadmill guarantees perpetual dissatisfaction unless we develop strategies to step off it. Philosophy exploded globally in the 6th century BC. Pythagoras in Italy, Confucius in China, Buddha in India. Socrates revolutionized Western thought by asking, "How should we live?" After his shipwreck, Zeno founded Stoicism in the Stoa Poikile, a painted colonnade in Athens' marketplace offering free lectures. Unlike exclusive schools, Stoicism welcomed merchants, politicians, and ordinary citizens. Stoicism offered a practical middle path between cynic self-denial and Epicurean pleasure-seeking, appreciating pleasures while maintaining emotional independence. When Stoicism reached Rome around 140 BC, practical Romans streamlined Greek theories into actionable wisdom, introducing tranquility as their goal, freedom from disturbing emotions combined with cultivating joy. This created a powerful cycle. Pursuing virtue produces tranquility, which provides stability for virtuous choices. A Roman Stoic facing difficult decisions could ask, "What's the virtuous action here?" Choosing it brought peace, regardless of outcome. The great Roman Stoics came from radically different backgrounds, proving anyone could practice this philosophy. Seneca was Rome's wealthiest man, a successful playwright, investment banker, and advisor to Emperor Nero. Critics called him a hypocrite for preaching Stoicism while enjoying luxury, but Stoicism doesn't require poverty. You can enjoy fine wine and comfortable homes while remaining ready to lose them without regret. When Nero ordered his death, Seneca faced it with remarkable composure. Musonius Rufus chose philosophy over politics despite his aristocratic background. Banished by Nero to a desolate rock in the Aegean, he discovered a freshwater spring and continued teaching visiting disciples. Remarkably progressive, Musonius argued women possessed the same reasoning capacity as men and deserved equal philosophical education, a radical position in ancient Rome. Epictetus was born a slave to Nero's secretary. After gaining freedom, he established a philosophy school teaching the art of living, practical techniques for responding to insults, dealing with difficult relatives, and coping with grief. His handbook became one of history's most influential philosophical texts. Marcus Aurelius inherited the Roman throne, history's quintessential philosopher king. Despite chronic illness, an unfaithful wife, 8 children dying young, frontier wars, rebellions, and plague, he maintained equanimity. His private journal, Meditations, reveals someone constantly working to apply Stoic principles amid overwhelming responsibility. He observed that the art of living is more like wrestling than dancing. Sometimes you get thrown down, but you keep getting up. Hedonic adaptation makes us quickly take for granted whatever we obtain. That raise feels normal within months. Your dream apartment's flaws become obvious. The Stoics countered this with negative visualization. Regularly imagine losing what you value, your house burning, your partner leaving, your own mortality. This produces profound appreciation for what exists now. Saying grace before meals transforms ordinary food into something special by acknowledging it as gift rather than entitlement. Your morning coffee becomes luxury when you've imagined having none. Your child's laughter becomes precious when you've contemplated their mortality. Some naturally practice this. Despite chronic illness or financial struggles, they remain cheerful by appreciating simple blessings. Others, despite abundance, remain perpetually dissatisfied. If imagination fails, try projective visualization. Imagine how you'd react if someone else had your circumstances. Your cramped apartment seems fortunate compared to homelessness. Your frustrating job seems bearable compared to unemployment. The Stoics teach us to enjoy without clinging, fully appreciating what we have while recognizing its impermanence. By remembering each experience could be our last, we invest ordinary moments with extraordinary significance. Epictetus opens his handbook with a radical claim. Some things are up to us, our opinions, impulses, desires, character, while others aren't, possessions, reputation, body, death. When we desire things beyond our control, frustration follows. The dichotomy of control is actually a trichotomy. Things we completely control, our values and efforts, things we can't control at all, whether it rains, and things we partially control, winning a tennis match. The Stoic strategy? Set internal rather than external goals. In tennis, you can't control winning, but you completely control your effort, sportsmanship, and commitment. By internalizing your goal, playing your best rather than winning, you preserve tranquility regardless of outcome. An aspiring novelist should focus on writing quality work and regular submissions, not getting published. This explains why tranquility-seeking Stoics like Cato actively participated in tumultuous politics. His goal wasn't changing Rome's government, that was beyond his control. His goal was doing everything within his power to bring about change. Modern application? You can't control whether your boss appreciates you, but you can control doing excellent work. This triage, setting aside what's beyond control, focusing on what's within control, and internalizing goals for partial control situations, eliminates most daily frustration. The Stoics practiced fatalism toward the past and present, never the future. Seneca advised accepting fate's flow, while Epictetus compared us to actors performing assigned roles. We choose neither our parts nor our stage, but we must play them brilliantly. A mother with a sick child should actively seek treatment, influencing the controllable future. But if the child dies, she must accept what cannot be changed. Dwelling on if-only thoughts causes needless grief. Apply this now. Stuck in traffic? Accept it, and options emerge. Listen to podcasts, practice breathing, enjoy solitude. True freedom comes from accepting what we cannot change while focusing on what we can influence. Yet historical Stoics were remarkably ambitious. Seneca was a celebrated playwright and advisor. Epictetus ran a successful school. Marcus Aurelius ruled Rome. They distinguished between external success, preferred but not essential, and internal excellence, vital. They enjoyed marriage, friendships, and comforts, preferred indifference that enhanced life but weren't necessary for happiness. Their approach teaches maintaining ambition while remaining detached from outcomes, focusing on honorable effort rather than results. When insulted, assess whether the criticism contains truth. If so, thank them for identifying a correctable flaw. If not, respond with humor or ignore it. It reflects poorly on them, not you. Epictetus suggests asking, "What character trait of mine would make him think that?" Finding none, dismiss it as meaningless. For grief, Stoics acknowledge initial sorrow is reflexive. We can't eliminate it when losing loved ones. The goal is maintaining balanced responses reflecting an affectionate and not an unbalanced mind. Prevention comes through negative visualization. Regularly contemplating loved ones' mortality reduces shock when loss occurs and ensures we fully appreciate relationships while they exist. Regarding anger, Seneca rejects claims it provides useful motivation. The fundamental problem, once activated, anger becomes uncontrollable. When already angry, force yourself to relax your face, soften your voice, and slow your walking. Your internal state will soon match your external calm. While other people provide life's greatest delights through love and friendship, they also cause most negative emotions. Marcus explains that humans have the primary function of rationality and the secondary function of social interaction. We must engage with others, but we can preserve inner peace through proper expectations and internal goals. In a world obsessed with external achievement, Stoicism offers something radically different: genuine contentment regardless of circumstances. Not through self-deception or lowered standards, but through psychological techniques that transform how we experience reality. Practicing Stoicism requires effort. Negative visualization takes practice. Self-discipline demands willpower. Yet not practicing philosophy requires considerably more effort. The time and energy people waste on anxiety, anger, and insatiable desires far outweighs what it takes to develop Stoic practices. Having a philosophy of life dramatically simplifies decision-making. You simply choose options aligned with your philosophical goals. Without such guidance, even simple choices trigger existential crises. Most importantly, lacking a philosophy risks misliving, pursuing unworthy goals, or pursuing worthy ones foolishly. You needn't believe in Zeus or God to practice Stoicism. Evolutionary theory explains why we need it. Our programming evolved to help ancestors survive and reproduce, not to give us tranquil lives. By misusing our intellect, we can overcome these tendencies through Stoic techniques. Regarding anger, there's little to lose by trying Stoicism, and potentially an entire life to gain. Not a life free from challenges, those are inevitable, but one where challenges don't destroy your peace. Not a life without ambition, but one where happiness doesn't depend on ambition's success. Not a life without emotion, but one where negative emotions don't control you and positive ones flow more freely. As Marcus Aurelius discovered while ruling an empire during plague and war, through Stoicism, you might gain something more valuable than any external achievement, a whole new way of being alive.